The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to The Curious Clinicians, a medical podcast that asks why. I'm Avi Cooper, and I'm joined, as always, by my incredible friends and co-hosts, Hannah Abrams and Tony Brew. It is so good to see you both. How is it going?
It's going great for me.
It's great to see you guys.
Spring is in the air. We were hanging out in our garden this evening. It was beautiful. I don't know how y'all have been enjoying the weather.
For me, it's just pollen season. So
sneezes and coughs.
My garden and my deck are just pure yellow.
Yeah, this has been the first week that it's been above 70 degrees outside in Boston, so I am living it up.
Enjoy it while it lasts. Soon it's going to be 95.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Tony, what's our topic for discussion today?
All right, well, pretty early on in medical school, I was told, and I suspect you guys were told, that it takes weeks for the radiographic infiltrate to resolve after a bout of pneumonia. And it was kind of this sort of statement I hear and accepted without question. I mean, I think most of everything I heard in medical school, I accepted without question. But more recently, I began to wonder, like, what was actually in that infiltrate at week 2 or 4 or 6? Because the patient was getting better, but like, why wasn't the x-ray getting better? And as I researched the answer, I came across a cellular process that had previously been totally unknown to me, and I thought it was really fascinating, and so I wanted to share it here with all of you.
I'm excited for this one. I feel like my intern year was defined by multifocal pneumonia, likely COVID-19 in x-ray reads, honestly. But one of the things that was like bedeviling about it was that so often the radiographic findings would be out of proportion to the hypoxemia.
Yeah.
In both directions. And so I kind of internalized that as like, oh yeah, maybe some people are later in their course, or maybe some people are having a different type of inflammation. And, you know, I knew that it takes weeks for, in lobar pneumonia, a chest x-ray to return to normal. So I imagine that there's maybe some contribution of what the organism is. Is that true?
Yeah, there is. And you know, this idea that sometimes you'll have a patient with, say, COVID, for example, who has a COVID-related pneumonia and they get readmitted and you're looking at the CT often in this case and you're like, wait a minute, is this like a new pneumonia? Is this the continuation of the old pneumonia? It's often a debate that I think we have as inpatient treating providers. But more generally, it's, I think, true that the organism does matter in terms of how quickly these infiltrates resolve. So one example is offered in the study from Thorax in 1984. And they looked at different organisms and they sort of examined how quickly the infiltrates resolved on chest x-ray. And they found that the resolution was fastest with mycoplasma pneumonia, your classic quote-unquote walking pneumonia. Psittacosis and then a non-bacteremic pneumococcal pneumonia cleared at sort of an intermediate rate. And then Legionella and a pneumococcal pneumonia that was bacteremic, they had the slowest period of resolution. And what's amazing is that at 12 weeks, so 3 months, just under half of patients with Legionella pneumonia still had an infiltrate. Like in some cases, it really takes a long time to go away.
And that certainly tracks with how bad Legionella can be, you know, yeah. Sort of just intuitively how severe it can get. And also, you know, we treat it, you know, for longer courses with, you know, with antibiotics and other kinds of pneumonia often. But, you know, before we tackle these, you know, sort of the later stages of pneumonia, can you remind us what is actually in the infiltrate that we're seeing radiographically?
In the early pneumonia?
Yeah, early on.
Yeah, so the early stages, you've got neutrophils that are drawn to the alveoli basically to attend to those invading bacteria. And this happens at the behest of cytokines, including things like IL-8. And the result is a chest x-ray infiltrate that contains these neutrophils, and they're sort of engulfing the bacteria. And then there is also attendant edema and fibrin and red blood cells and desquamated epithelial cells. So like if you think about it in general, this is your, you know, inflammatory infiltrate.
Also known as, I guess, pus, right?
Yeah, I think we could fairly call this just pus, yes.
All right. So how long are we at this phase of just it's pus in the lungs? These are all neutrophils.
So this is what you see over the first kind of 1 to 4 days of a bacterial pneumonia. And I'll be honest, the fact that we see this inflammatory infiltrate early on with the sort of the neutrophils being a sort of key component, it helps explain, at least in part, why corticosteroids might help in severe cases, right? Because it's often that over-exuberant inflammatory response that leads to severe illness, and steroids can sort of help dampen that to some extent.
Although that is certainly controversial and continues to be.
It is. It absolutely does. And, you know, the more severe, maybe the more likely that the steroids might help, because that's indicative potentially of a more like severe inflammatory response. Though, again, we could debate that maybe on another episode.
Or seven.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we do use them in ARDS, right? I mean, you know, right. Like which is often caused by infectious pneumonia. But okay, so we've got that sort of early phase of that for those first 4 days of pneumonia down with that sort of exuberant inflammatory infiltrate. What happens next?
Yeah, so around day 5, the bacteria have basically been removed and neutrophils are no longer the main immune cell because they don't need to attend to the bacteria anymore. But we still see that infiltrate on chest x-ray. And if you look at some of the early studies from like the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, they suggest that consolidations can remain for up to 6 to 8 weeks, right? Even in sort of just your garden variety pneumococcal pneumonia. And as I mentioned earlier, depending on the organism, you might even see continuation of this infiltrate for periods even longer than 8 weeks.
So just to summarize, days 1 through 4, there's pus in the lungs. As early as day 5, the bacteria that caused the pneumonia and the infiltrate are probably gone based on what we've seen. I'm guessing these are kind of pathologic samples that we've taken over time. Is that where most of this data comes from?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So another thing that we could debate for 7 episodes would be antibiotic course lengths. But I feel like day 5, I typically feel pretty solid in kind of these uncomplicated community acquired pneumonias that you described. So is the fact that the bacteria are gone pathologically and the neutrophils are gone and whatever else is left is there, is that why we can stop the antibiotics before the infiltrate resolves?
I think it's at least one of the reasons. There's probably many reasons. But you know, the reality is our body's immune response really addresses the bacteria that are present in the lung, you know, pretty well. And then the antibiotics that we're giving are undoubtedly accelerating that process. And so if you look back a few decades, you know, we learned that bacteria very, very quickly disappear from the sputum once appropriate antibiotics are administered. And this happens within just a couple of days. And to your point, Hannah, this is really part of the reason for short duration regimens in pneumonia, right? If the bacteria are quickly killed and the pneumonia and the alveoli are quickly sterilized, longer courses really aren't required. And sort of to kind of highlight this point, you know, there's a study from 1970 where they gave either a single intramuscular dose of long-acting penicillin or a single day's therapy of oral penicillin, and they compared that with the sort of standard oral or injected therapies, right? So single dose of penicillin versus your usual dose. And they were doing this for the treatment of lobar pneumonia. And it turns out that those who got just the one dose did just as well as those who got the longer courses. And you know, does this prove that you can just give one dose? No, but it kind of helps to demonstrate this idea that we actually sterilize the lung pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, over time, right? Like just shorter and shorter and shorter antibiotic courses. The football scores get lower and lower and lower. Although, you know, certainly we're not advocating for one day antibiotic courses just yet. Right, Tony?
No. I would not advocate that we start to sort of give one dose of IM penicillin and call it a day. But it is intriguing nonetheless. And it's worth saying that like this study was from 1970, and I don't see any studies that have attempted to replicate it since. I think people are pretty comfortable with like 3 to 5 days being sort of the lower end of acceptable. But there's one other interesting observation that kind of follows from this idea of sort of rapid bacterial killing. And it's that this rapid bacterial killing also leads to a reduction in sort of the exogenous pyrogens, right? Like things like LPS. And this may also explain the equally swift resolution of fever in pneumonia once you start therapy. I mean, the fever typically resolves at day 2 or 3. And again, the kind of point of this episode is that infiltrate is still going to be there weeks and weeks and weeks after that clinical stability has been achieved.
And so what is going on in those weeks and weeks sort of after we have reached clinical stability where we have this infiltrate, but the bacteria and the neutrophils are gone? So what is actually there?
Yeah, so the main cell early on, again, is neutrophil, or say the main inflammatory cell. During this period of recovery, after sort of day 4 or 5, the main cell is the macrophage, the lovely, lovely macrophage.
Interesting. So what are these, you know, macrophages doing? Like, the bacteria are gone, so there really isn't infection to control. Like, is it just mop-up duty?
Yeah, so they are, in short, doing a mop-up duty, yes. The actual term for this is efferocytosis. Although I'm going to actually ask the two of you, like, I've never heard another human being pronounce this word. So I said efferocytosis, but I don't know, maybe it's efferocytosis. How should we define the pronunciation of this word for the remainder of the podcast?
I learned a new word tonight, Tony. I learned a new word.
Yeah. What do you think? Effero, efero? What do you prefer?
I fear I don't know this.
All right, I'm going to go with efferocytosis, and if someone is an expert in the field, they can sort of make a comment. But this is a cellular process, again, I had never heard of before I started reading about chest X-ray resolution. And so efferocytosis is the removal of apoptotic bodies, again, by these macrophages. And some of the apoptotic bodies might include neutrophils that have the engulfed bacteria. So in essence, the immune system kind of goes nuts appropriately over the first sort of 1 to 4 days, right? They're going in there and they're going crazy taking care of the bacteria. And the neutrophils and the cytokines, they create an enormous immune response. And this leads to the intended outcome of bacterial killing. But as a result of this, and unintended, is also tissue injury. And this mess needs to be cleaned up. And the macrophages basically spend weeks and weeks cleaning up a mess that neutrophils created in just a few short days. And, you know, Avi, you're a parent. When I kind of thought about this, it sounded very much like the mess that is created by my children. Like, it can take a whirlwind of just like 10 to 15 minutes, and then I'm cleaning that room for many, many hours. I feel like I am constantly undergoing efferocytosis in my own home.
I've never commiserated with an alveolar macrophage before, but
as a pulmonologist, you're telling me you've never commiserated with an alveolar macrophage?
I've respected them and valued them and been grateful for their function, but no, I mean, yeah, this is exactly 15 minutes and an hour of cleanup.
Certainly. From esteemed colleagues now to a sympathetic friend. I love this journey for you, Avi. Okay, so how do these macrophages know what to remove from sort of all of this junk that has been strewn everywhere?
Yeah, because you don't want them to remove the good stuff, right? You know, what's amazing is the apoptotic cells, they increase the exposure of phosphatidylserine. And this, when it's sort of exposed on the surface of these apoptotic bodies, it's recognized by the macrophages as a kind of eat me signal, right? Come destroy me, get me out of here. And if it's going well, efferocytosis prevents secondary necrosis and the can sort of continued release of pro-inflammatory molecules from these apoptotic bodies. So, you know, we want that early inflammatory response, but once we've sterilized the lung and the bacteria are gone, we really need to ratchet things back. And so unsurprisingly, the more effective efferocytosis is, the sort of more symptomatic recovery you achieve. So there are actually a number of things that affect efferocytosis. Smoking, for just one example, impairs it. And so unsurprisingly, smoking leads to a sort of prolonged recovery after a bacterial pneumonia.
Is there anything that makes it better or faster?
Yeah, so quitting smoking. But beyond that, there's also some data that glucocorticoids and, if you can believe it, statins even augment efferocytosis. And what's cool is statins have actually been tested as an adjunctive therapy for the treatment of CAP with no benefit seen. But when you look at the studies, they typically are giving the statins early on, like over the first 4 days, for their quote-unquote anti-inflammatory activities. I am not aware of any trials where they've looked at statins for a longer period of time and sort of this tail end to see, does the resolution of the chest X-ray get better? And that kind of doesn't surprise me because if someone's feeling better at 2 weeks, does it really matter if their chest X-ray was resolved at 5 weeks versus 8 weeks? So it's not necessarily a clinically or patient-centered outcome.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Why that might not be studied because patients are getting better anyway. But this seems like something that maybe like bacteria might try to take advantage of or disrupt, to sort of try to win the war against us.
Right. They cause the infection and we've got the neutrophils and the macrophages and then the bacteria are like, well, I can one up you and I will sort of see your efferocytosis and, double down with something else. So yes, there are many bacteria that have tried to either circumvent or take advantage of this process. And Klebsiella pneumonia is one example. So it actually has been found to impede efferocytosis by preventing that phosphatidylserine from being expressed on the surface of the apoptotic neutrophils. And so it kind of like blunts that response. And then there are a whole host of other organisms, including Salmonella, Mycobacterium tuberculosis, and Legionella, again, that inhibit apoptosis itself. And that then limits the ability for macrophages to engage in efferocytosis. And I kind of wonder, specifically, Legionella's ability to do this is one of the reasons why that infiltrate persists for what appears to be a longer period of time compared to some other causes of bacterial pneumonia. Now, as I was thinking about all this, I was realizing that, Avi, you probably think in these terms as you see patients with sort of chronic infiltrate. So does this idea ever come up as you're talking with colleagues or teaching fellows and other conditions where you think this might be playing a role?
Well, I had learned a new word tonight, so I've never heard of efferocytosis. But certainly like alveolar macrophages like come up all the time and dysfunction, lots of different, airway-based and parenchymal lung disease. So it's not surprising that this process seems to be sort of a central process in lung healing.
And it definitely has been shown that for some of the conditions where you have chronic infiltrates that just really recalcitrant and aren't going away, things like IPF or cystic fibrosis, that efferocytosis has been deemed incomplete or not fully effective in some of those cases. And to what extent that's playing a role, I think remains not completely known, but at least some role is probably there.
Yeah. Isn't histoplasma like the ultimate tricker of the alveolar macrophage, like that it can be found inside the macrophages? I wonder, because it's like such a subacute process, if it's really affecting that part of the healing process.
That wouldn't surprise me at all because, whenever I think about, tuberculosis, those endemic mycoses often act in a similar manner. I didn't see anything specifically about histo, but it would not surprise me in the least if it somehow found a way to kind of get around these alveolar macrophages doing their job, being the parents of the lung.
Those granulomas.
I know. It really, all of the trickiest lung infections really really seem to focus on the macrophages and not so much the neutrophils. The other thing this did remind me of is like in our first 10 episodes, we talked about why septic pulmonary emboli cause a radiographic infiltrate when sort of regular pulmonary emboli or bland pulmonary emboli don't. And one of the papers that we referenced in that episode talked about the gram-positive septic pulmonary emboli having this much bigger appearance than gram-negative. It doesn't fit with the Legionella thing, but I do wonder if also really severe pneumococcal infections, if it's all about just like what is the inflammatory reaction that we're creating.
Yeah, I mean, pneumococcus is one of the classic infections where the inflammatory response is profound, which is why, giving it for pneumococcal meningitis is important. There's a potential signal that of the pneumonias where steroids have a benefit, it's the pneumococcal pneumonia. So pneumococcus is not unique, but it is an extremely inflammatory bacterium, and that certainly plays a role. To what extent it plays a role in, again, the continuation of the infiltrate, it's not clear.
All I know is everyone should thank their alveolar macrophages. So.
Done.
And their parents.
And their parents, yeah, exactly.
All right. Joni, do you have any other take-home points for us?
Yes. So the first is that the initial infiltrate, right, the one we see over those first 4 days, is really pus, right? It's neutrophils, bacteria, and, a few other things, but it's really just neutrophils and bacteria. That's like the key components of that early infiltrate when the patient is the sickest. That later infiltrate, the one that we see for weeks and weeks and weeks, even after the patient has stabilized clinically, is largely made up of macrophages engaging in efferocytosis. And that's the cleaning up of all that apoptotic debris that the neutrophils generated doing the hard work of sterilizing the lung and getting things better.
Incredible. All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of The Curious Clinicians. Thank you as always for joining us. As a reminder, you can join our mailing list at curiousclinicians.com to stay up to date on episode releases and have detailed notes delivered directly to your inbox. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn CME and MOC credits from VCU Health just for listening to this episode. So for more information, visit ce.vcuhealth.org/curiousclinicians. And as always, the information contained in this episode is for educational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute medical advice. Until next time, we've been The Curious Clinicians.